just going to say, the first time I ever listened to Full Nail, I was on a lot of edibles. That was a really good experience. Peace.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Toilet of Hell Radio Show. This is your first show. What we're going to do is we're gonna talk about metal in some form or another. We're not going to do it on this episode because a motherfucker didn't show up. Sometimes we do interviews. Not on this one, of course. Sometimes we just, make jokes. Sometimes it's, free-form jazz improvisation. Anyway, if you like what we do here and you want to hear more, you can subscribe to our Patreon. Give us a little bit of money, get some bonus episodes. And those are all, I believe, at least B-plus quality shows. If you enjoy this show, also what you can do is you can rate and review us on iTunes, and that'll bump up our stock. And then also, fucking tell a friend. If you have a friend that likes weird humor, leftist politics, and metal, all three of those things combined, we might be up his alley. So, tell a motherfucker. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me today, I've got my co-host, 365 Days of Horror, and Renicide! How's it going, fellas?
Good, man. You couldn't get the interview, but you guys got me, and that's just as good.
Kind of. It's pretty good. It's all right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been kind of a quiet weekend outside of St. Patrick's Day. Every St. Patrick's Day weekend, we just have, corned beef and cabbage at my mom's house, and I don't go out to bars and get incredibly drunk, but I get incredibly drunk so I can tolerate my mother, so it's kind of like partying.
Yeah. It sounds very, very Irish. 365, what's up with you?
I successfully avoided having to deal with anyone on St. Patrick's Day, so I consider that a win.
Wonderful. Sweet. Yeah, we plan on having one of your favorite musicians on this show, but unfortunately just didn't show up. I don't want to put him on blast or anything. The band he's in, it's M Magnet. That's too obvious. Monster M was the name of the band.
Yeah, so, don't put him on blast, but if you guys, want to figure out that very cryptic hint.
Yeah. So just saying, fuck to them. Anyway, so South by Southwest, today is the last day of it, finally, so I can actually spend less than 2 hours commuting to work and back home, which is nice. The industry people are finally going to leave town, and I'm pretty into that. I didn't get to go to any of the metal shows around, of which there were a few really good ones, because they were either, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon while I was working, or at 3 o'clock in the morning, because that's a time that everybody likes to go to shows. So, I didn't see Terror, I didn't see Spirit Adrift, I didn't see Gate Creeper, but it's okay, not bitter at all, not bitter.
I think it's for the best that you didn't see Terror.
Really?
Oh, not so much.
Sorry. I misspoke. Terror, Integrity, I mean.
Oh, well, that's different then. Terror, yeah. You just get punched in the back of the head.
Yeah, yeah. Integrity played a couple of shows, one of which while I was at work, and another one, a secret show, from what I heard at 3 a.m. on the Congress Pedestrian Bridge. I bet that was pretty sweet. I didn't get to go. Fuck me. But you guys had a show that you wanted to go to, and you didn't get to go either.
Well, we were thinking of going to see Demolich, Blood Incantation, Artificial Brain. The first night of the tour is actually coming to Providence in a super, super tiny venue, which is a nice space, but I knew it was going to sell out super quick, and lo and behold, it did. This place holds maybe 100 people if they cram everyone in. And it's just why didn't you move to a real venue where lots of people can go and lots of people can spend their money that you want? But I guess we didn't luck out this time.
What is the name of the venue that always has big pay-to-play festivals?
That would be FET.
FET, I suppose that they had maybe the vintage arcade game and tattoo showcase featuring Kingsman that day.
Well, funny you should mention that, because coming up, I think in a week, is the Providence Tattoo Festival with headliner Hatebreed and absolutely no one else you've ever heard of, because that's how things are done in this stupid city.
Wait, headlined Kingsman aren't going to be there?
Oh, they're on. Of course they're
okay,
on.
Okay.
No, no worries there. They're going to co-headline them. They're going to co-headline, I'm sure.
Doors open at 12, first band on at 11:50.
So 365, did you manage to get tickets to the show? Or
I didn't even bother.
Oh, you didn't bother. Okay.
No. I don't love any of the bands enough to really like sit by my computer during work hours, hitting refresh until it was time to buy tickets. Like, Blood Incantation, cool. Artificial Brain, cool. Demolich, the music is cool. I am not into the frog vocals.
Those are really fun for me.
It's one of those shows where like I would have gone and had fun, but like I do not need to really see any of those bands. Like, it's not a have to see. It was more of a, yeah, that'd be cool. So I'm not that broke at it.
That's a thing at this age. Once you kind of pass that 30 mark, you have to make some big decisions when it comes to concerts, because your feet and your back ain't what they used to be. So, you know, is it a have to see or is it a kind of cool to see?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of cool to see is usually falling to the wayside.
Yeah, I'm at the point where it's I have to want to see the band or I'm opening for them. Other than that, no.
Right. Yeah.
I like Demolich, okay? I've seen Artificial Brain before. Good band. Will Smith is a really cool dude. We, of course, had him on the show. Blood Incantation is the one that I really want to see. I've missed out the last two times they came to Austin because it was, you know, 1 a.m. on a school night and I had just a shit ton of work to do. It's tough when, yeah, like you said, you're 30 plus. It's just, I have to go to work. I have to pay my mortgage.
Right.
But this tour is going to New Orleans, and I happen to be going to New Orleans for a buddy's wedding that same week, so I think I'm just going to stick around, I think, an extra 2 days so I can go to that date and catch the whole thing.
You're just going to be full of hurricanes and beignets ready to see Blood Incantation?
Just vomiting in the gutter.
Put a cap on your what's that alcoholic slushy they got down there? What do they call those?
Those are purple hurricanes. Ones. Yeah.
Oh, they're just hurricanes. Okay.
Yeah.
Keep a cap on it.
Daiquiris. Yeah.
There it is. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, if you keep a cap on it in that place, you can walk around with it anywhere.
I mean, you don't even have to keep the cap on it. The cap is for driving around with it.
That's right, driving. Yeah.
Because you can get a drive-through drink because New Orleans is a godless city. I went pretty recently with my lady. We had a good time. We didn't get to spend enough time there, so we're looking forward to going back. So if there's any of you toilet bros in the New Orleans area, go to that show. We'll hang out.
Don't they have like good ghost tours there?
They do. I've never done it. We didn't have time. We did tour a graveyard, which was incredibly badass.
Yeah,
we didn't get to see Nick Cage's crypt though. That one was closed that day that we tried to go.
So. I remember when my wife and I we went there on our honeymoon in New Orleans. We were talking to this guy at a local record store about the things we should do, and he's like, "Oh man, you really got to check out the graveyard, but you definitely don't want to go there at night." And I'm just like, "Ooh, I'm sure we don't." And he's like, "Well, no, it's in the project, so."
Yeah.
Okay.
It is filled with crust punks on meth, so.
Yeah. Although I think they closed it to the public recently. I think you have to go on a tour now because there was so much vandalism.
So, yeah, there's like there's two really big ones with like the nice historic mausoleums and stuff. Number two is the one that's generally closed to the public.
Because of Marie LeBeau's tomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. Looking forward to it. New Orleans is fun. I'm going to gamble.
Just eat.
Yeah, the food's good, too. I am too much of a lightweight for the daiquiris. We went to one of those drive-thru shops, and the guy behind the counter was easily 450 pounds. And we had, we got small daiquiris, and the guy just looked at us, like, shook his head, like, you fucking pathetic person. Like, because they offer, like, 64-ounce, you know, cups full of sugary alcohol, and it's, I just can't deal with
it. You just bring a bucket, and they fill it to the top for you.
Pretty much. That's
disgusting.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. I don't think tickets for that have gone on sale yet. I don't know if they have a venue for that yet, so I'm going to stay on top of it. Hopefully we don't lose out. What happened in the world this week? It seems like we might have ruffled a few feathers.
Well, you got old Terrorizer magazine. They seem to deny something that seemed pretty obvious.
They snapped out of their slumber of 4 or 5 months of not communicating.
Right. I mean, if that's the way you got to do it, that's the way you got to do it. It's like, so you guys are dead, right? And then 10 days later, no.
You got to poke that body with a stick.
Yeah.
Well, we're all American, so I really haven't encountered Terrorizer magazine that often. Occasionally I would see it in the stands at, like, Barnes & Noble or something like that, but even then it's pretty rare. It's a UK-based magazine. It's way better distribution there. So I hadn't really realized they were having any problems until I was seeing a couple of foreign bros on Twitter talking about it, like, hey, have you guys heard anything from Terrorizer? Apparently over the last 2 or 3 years, they've had a lot of trouble getting issues out to people, and it seems like only a handful of issues have actually been put out in that amount of time. And then there was total silence. In October, they sent out their November issue of 2017, and that was it. And a lot of people didn't even get that. From then, they quit updating their blog online, they quit updating Facebook or Twitter, and it was just silence. People were still getting auto-renew charges for their subscriptions and getting nothing in return. So I wrote a piece like, I'm pretty sure Terrorizer is dead, you guys, because they don't do anything. The one thing a publication has to do is publish.
Right.
If you're a publication that doesn't publish, you're nothing.
Yeah, you're like a fish that's not swimming, so.
So that got picked up by the blogosphere. I'm pretty sure every single major and minor metal blog reposted our story or reworded it, or in the case of some really shitty Irish blog, plagiarized my words.
Plagiarized it while, like, saying you were wrong at the same time.
Yeah, they were calling us out, like, we were premature. And to be fair, I got a couple of very, very angry responses because Terrorizer, suddenly with everybody talking about them being dead and with their subscribers getting shafted and with contributors coming out and saying, like, hey, I haven't been paid for my work. Suddenly, they came back, Miranda, the person that owns Terrorizer, posted on Facebook, reports of our death have been premature. We are working on getting things together, and we'll be on the newsstand again soon. To which I say, I will believe it when I see it. I just think that coming back from this is going to be impossible, with so many of their best customers feeling like they got the shaft and in fact getting the shaft. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah, it's not just getting back. Like, it's not just about, like, oh, we're going to do stuff again soon. It's like righting all the fucking wrongs you have piled up for yourself and doing it, like, in a timely fashion. Paying all your contributors, you know, refunding everybody's money who deserves refunds. I mean, at the very least, you can start sending these people magazines and send them magazines, like a surplus of those magazines with the months they already paid for and didn't get anything without any sort of notice or apology whatsoever.
Yeah, I have the post in front of me if you want me to read it.
Sure.
All right, this was posted on Facebook's, on Terrorizer's Facebook page, March 16th. I am writing regarding the recent rumors prematurely reporting the demise of Terrorizer. I can confirm this is not the case and that we are working to resume a regular production schedule, Consequently, we will honor existing magazine subscriptions and will reappear on the newsstands. I will address any outstanding subscription refunds via PayPal and apologize for any delays in getting these to you. I am painfully aware of the gap in publication we have had, the responsibility for which I ultimately bear myself. Terrorizer has a very small but dedicated team, and I am thankful they have stood by me and the magazine through what has been a difficult period for all of us.
Yeah, well, if Miranda convert, like, you know, put as much effort into Terrorizer and fixing all these issues as she did just, like, pissing off everybody in the entire world with her turf crap, it's like, you know, maybe she'd make some of this stuff happen. Her life hasn't been that hard. She's been very active online.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is, but when you own all of these communication platforms where it's very cheap, very free, as a matter of fact, and very easy to say, like, hey, I don't have an update for you. We're working on things. It'll be a while. Is probably better than saying nothing. Of course, using her personal Twitter account to spread all kinds of nonsense. I feel like this is something that, like, I don't even want to touch with a 10-foot pole.
Fair enough. I'll keep it to myself.
I mean, like, I find it incredibly objectionable, but it's also not my place to say. I would defer to people whose voices are maybe a little bit more knowledgeable than ours, you know? But I do think that it's fucked up.
Right. But she has all sorts of other places where she's publishing material, writing things. I believe she's speaking at places, all sorts of stuff. Essentially, she's – I think it was you, Jordan, who said she's like the Milo Yiannopoulos of trans people.
Yeah.
Like, just someone who manages to be so oppressed but still working so fucking hard to oppress other people at the same time. So
I don't understand. I'm not sure exactly when she became the owner of Terrorizer. I have a ton of work to do. I have a ton of people to talk to because I want to get this story right. I want to do a follow-up on this where I talk to a lot of people who have taken part in the publication. And I want to hear their stories over the years of, like, because Terrorizer is a magazine that has done a lot of good for metal in general. You know, starting in the early 90s, they really championed a lot of death metal, like a lot of extreme underground bands that, like, we all know today that we probably might not have without their voice.
Sure.
There's a complicated history with this, and I want to get it right.
But, yeah, and as you should. I mean, the biggest issue I take with them kind of calling you out and saying that you're wrong and you said these things prematurely is that all you really did was report quite a bit of facts. You talked to people, you heard about things from contributors and readers alike. I mean, these things happened. It did take them, what was it, like 7-8 months to not say anything? So, I mean,
well,
you
just
didn't really do anything,
like,
wrong.
Well, just saying, like, Terrorizer hasn't tweeted since November or December, there's nothing factually incorrect about it.
Right. It's so. You just had a lot of information, and you were like, it looks like Terrorizer's dead. That's essentially all you said, because they gave you all of that evidence. So, I mean, that's on them. That's not on us. I mean, if we can rescind that and say, okay, so apparently they're now talking again, I mean, that's the least we could do, but...
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Having a social media account that says something once every 6 months is not the same as being a fully functional publication.
Correct.
Yeah. So, and again, the statement is just a statement. It's one of those things where we have to wait until any actual action happens before we can really comment on it, because until a new subscription or until a new publication comes out, it's not true. Until people start getting their refunds, it's not true.
Yeah,
until people start getting the magazines they've been owed for, in some cases I've seen years, it's not true. So it's a nice collection of fluffy, flowery words that don't mean anything until there's any action done.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yep. So we'll see. It could be that they never make it a statement saying that we're done. It could just be another... year, 2 years, who knows how long of total silence.
So. And there will still be some people who are like, hey, it's great that they, you know, said they're fixing it. Everything's fine, which is some of the responses that that post received.
One of my favorite comments I saw is how somebody did the typical fanboy thing and called everybody so entitled to free stuff was the quote. And then everybody immediately corrected him and said, we paid for this shit. We're talking not just contributors who didn't get paid. And we're not just talking about subscribers that didn't have their magazine sent to them. But we're also talking about bands who paid for spots to be published in the magazine and did not ever see any spots or refund for their money.
Is that also a thing that happened? I didn't know about that.
Yeah, we had there was a band who replied to that specific comment I'm referencing who said, look, you know, I paid to have a spot in one of these magazines that never existed.
Ooh, oy.
Yeah.
Well, goddamn, bands don't pay for coverage.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, I don't know. I never really, because I'm an American, I never really... I rarely saw Terrorizer, and I, of course, being broke for all of my life, didn't pay for the import issues. I normally went for more domestic mags. Did you guys ever? What kind of metal mags did you pick up?
Circus.
Yeah.
That was the best one because it had all the. It was just nothing but posters of every Slipknot member from cover to cover, every issue. Yeah.
I initially thought that Circus was a Slipknot-specific publication.
Sam, yeah. And you took out all the full-page posters and you just put them all over your wall until you didn't have a wall anymore. You just had Circus magazine pictures of Slipknot members. And that was old Breno at maybe like 13.
Was it Hit Parader too that had
all the
new metal stuff? I picked up those on occasion. But my favorite, you know, not a strict... metal magazine by any indication, but close enough. I picked up Guitar World all the time.
Yeah, Guitar World was great.
Yeah, because they covered, you know, all the shit that I liked, and then they had a little tab in the back, so you could,
in the back.
Yeah, so that you could not play it well.
It just was never right. You just had to go play metal by numbers and give it your best shot. That's what a power chord is.
Yeah. For as many issues as I've read of Guitar World, I should be a much better guitarist.
Well, there's only so many like Dunlop Crybaby Wah ads you can look at before you either buy one or don't.
That's fair. No, I spent a lot of time like looking at the pictures and shit, and they had posters too. I put those on my wall. I remember for some reason one of them had a poster of Kirk Hammett taking a shit while playing acoustic guitar.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. I don't know why that existed, but I definitely owned it.
Right. Metal Hammer was another big one. Yep. Although when I bought it, I didn't realize it was like a UK publication. So they spelt like color wrong and stuff. And I was kind of weirded out by that as a young kid, but that's all right. I rolled with it. They never published my sternly worded letters correcting them, but that's okay. What else? We had, of course, there's Revolver, our best buddies with their hottest chicks.
When did Revolver come onto the scene? Because I really don't remember seeing them.
Like 2000.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Okay.
Very long time ago.
I guess for some reason, I must have been past the... Well, I guess Hastings, the music/movie/magazine store that I would buy all these from, closed down. So I guess that marks about the end of my period of buying these magazines.
When I started to become a little bit older and a little more snobby with my metal listening, I kind of got into Decibel a bit more. They seemed to kind of do a better job of covering the stuff I cared about, as opposed to, you know, there's a lot of fluff in like Revolver and Kerrang and Metal Hammer. They were more the poppier side of things because they knew that's what sold magazines, was to put the bigger bands on the cover and such. So Decibel, I felt like, was a little bit more representative of the underground. So that was something I was into probably in my later teens. But I mean, honestly, I haven't bought a magazine in like it's been like 11, 12 years since I've bought one of those.
Yeah. I went to college in 2005, and that was the first time that I ever had super fast internet. And we were connected in my dorm room to this thing called the Hub, which was just this wonderful, massively illegal network of every computer in this one of the largest dorms in America, where everybody was sharing every file that they had. So you could
sick.
It was fucking fantastic. In 10 seconds, you could download the complete discography of a band that you had read in one of those magazines forever ago, but you never had the dough to pick up one of those CDs, but you suddenly had it all.
That's where P2P came from, was college dorms, Napster and everything. Those guys started out that same exact way.
The kid that ran it lived on my hall, and he was eventually picked up by the actual police for running this. Big ups to that. Actually, I'm pretty sure Andy O'Connor, the metal writer, was his roommate. One day we'll ask him about the history of the Hub, because I got a long history. I got a very fond memories of that. I stopped reading metal magazines when suddenly I could download shit from either the Hub or MP3 blogs, like we've talked about on this show before. Yeah. Those things were great. Mm-hmm. And then eventually metal publications like ours.
Yeah. I don't think the metal blog started really becoming a thing until much later. I think the whole P2P craze with Napster and, oh my God, like Kazaa and LimeWire, like you didn't have to read metal reviews anymore because you could just get the album yourself and just figure it out, which is still kind of the case, especially with like Spotify and things like that. But I don't know. Now you can get free reviews along with free listening. So it's actually worth your time to kind of just scroll through a metal blog and see something before you spend your precious, precious moments listening to an album when there's already a billion you could choose from.
Yeah.
Kind of wild how things have gone in just, I don't know, maybe the last 15 years.
Yeah. Jordan, what was your evolution like with all this?
I really came into metal just as like the internet was starting to kick around. So I really got into it through early metal websites and blogs, stuff like that. And but occasionally if I needed something to read for like going on a long trip, I would pick up, you know, like you said, or flip through a Hit Parade or a Circus or I did get Terrorizer once when I had to go on like a train ride from like DC to New York and was pissed off that it was like $9 and, wasn't all that particularly interesting. The only magazine I ever really liked that I got one time was Metal Maniacs. I think that was European. I don't know if it was British or not, but it definitely introduced me to a whole bunch of new bands I'd never heard of. And one of the things I liked about it was in the back was classified ads, like if you like Megadeth and Slayer, send me, you know, a postcard and stuff like that.
That kicks ass. Somebody a while ago on Twitter had posted screenshots from these old 1980s metal mags, like basically people looking for pen pals, like to talk about like sharing their tastes in metal and like, hey, let's sext via postcard.
Sick. And there were definitely prison ones in there too. I remember that.
I would love to go pick up a pile of these old mags and like take scans of these and post them up on our site. I think that'd be a lot of fun for everybody.
I bet you if you pick up some of those magazines and you got ones from prison, like some of these guys are probably serving sentences long enough, that you could still send them some shit.
I was a radio DJ in college and had a metal show, and I received jail mail from someone. I still have it.
Great.
What did they say?
It was fairly friendly. Like, hey, love listening to your show. Can you play these songs? And it went on for like four pages.
Only if you tell me what you're in for.
Well, I found out what he was in for.
What was it?
Internet and freedom of information.
Right on.
What was it?
I think it was like armed robbery.
Oh, that's not so cool.
That's not so bad. He's not going to kill anybody. It's just, you know, money or your life, man. Easy decision.
Yeah.
That's why pencils have erasers.
Right.
But this kind of leads me to Brenna, we before we started recording, you had mentioned you were a little heated about a discussion that we had online about metal blogs and magazines.
Oh, I wouldn't say I was heated, but
I mean, you sounded pretty pissed off.
But I am like, now.
You were like, Joe, I will. You were like, Joe, I will kick your ass. I am so peed.
I will fuck your cock
now.
I definitely told Joe in the DMs that he was dead meat next time I saw him. No,
I'll freaking beat you. That's what you said. Right. Anyway,
we had a bit of a back and forth on Twitter because one of the PR guys that we both chat with, he put up a poll where he asked just generally everybody who is in bands. He said, what would you guys rather have? Would you rather have one small piece featured in a big metal magazine? Would you rather have an interview on a podcast, or would you rather have I think it was like interviews on like 10 different blogs or something. So essentially
I think the correct what he said was interview on a blog, your song played on a podcast, or a smaller blurb in a big metal magazine.
Say, yeah, I got to remember the facts, but yeah, small blurb metal magazine versus a blog feature. And just talking candidly, I didn't want to appear biased because I've been doing blogs for a long time, but I was just like, well, if I really thought about it, and the honest answer for me would be that, well, I'd rather get myself in a magazine, especially if we're working from a guy in a PR perspective. Like, this guy's value, I find, is getting me in a magazine because I myself can't go on a computer and write a magazine and say, hey, let me get in one of those issues, man. I could do that. As a guy who plays music and it's good music, I could email Joe or Jordan here and I'd say, dudes, look, I love your blog, long time reader. Here's some of my music. Check it out. If you like it, maybe we can chat. Like, I can do that as an artist, as a human being. Like, that's the cool thing about blogs. That's what I like about blogs. But if you're talking about a PR guy, I mean, his worth is, I think, more in the ability to talk to some of these bigger publications that normally wouldn't give me the time of day. And instead, you know, what they normally do is they just take your music. They write you up like a nice email about who you are, some pictures, press, whole digital press kit nonsense. And then they just do an email blast to like 100 metal blogs and they call it a day and they move on to the next band. And I just don't see the value.
Okay. I would say to Curtis's credit, that is not all he does.
Drop Curtis at any point.
just in case anybody that listens to this show and saw our interactions online, as we mentioned on a different show, there are different levels of your PR person. And some of them, yeah, that's all they're going to do, and it's not terribly good.
It's been my experience with PR guys. PR guys have offered me.
Yeah, not all PR people are created equal, and some of them are even worse than that.
All PR.
Not all PR. One day we'll go through and we'll just name names of some of the shittiest PR we get.
Well, that's part of the discussion then too, is just being a blog, just how we're inundated literally every day with tens and hundreds of just blast emails. Listen to this band, listen to this album, listen to this 30-second lyric video that we released.
Honestly, man, as someone who used to get inundated with those sort of emails, the ones that stood out to me were the ones from band guys themselves, where it's just like I was going through my inbox and I would see the same names from the same PR people all the time. And then I get to this one and this guy's just like, oh, I'm Joe Schmo. Hey, here's my Joe Schmo band. Just let me know if you like it, Breno. Thanks a lot, man. And like, that was the one I'd click on. That was the guy I'd listen to. I really didn't give the time of day to the 10 billionth email I got from the same PR person over and over again. That was just my experience.
It depends on what that PR label is next to it, whether I click on it or not, to be perfect.
You know, and I mean, these things aren't so cut and dry. I definitely see the value in metal blogs. I think there's a lot more humanity involved as far as, especially like you were bringing up to me that, hey, I got a Bandcamp song embedded right in the post you made about me. Whereas if I was just in a magazine in some guy's bathroom, he'd have to make a mental note to remember who I was and then decide to Google me or buy my album or not.
So let me just put this as an example, because we were talking about sure. mailbags. I mean, so you get featured in, let's say, Decibel.
Right.
They write you up a nice little blurb. They say, the Brenicide Experience is a cool band. My favorite song is Joe Thrash and Kill, I'll Knock Your Block Off, I Swear to Christ. And that's cool. I'll see that, and then I'll read the main article that I was reading about Crotch Monster and then move on with my life. I mean, can you imagine how many times I read the word taproot back in those old metal mags? I still don't know what they sound like. I've never heard a taproot song in my life.
But you do remember that their name is Taproot, whereas if you saw it on a blog, yeah. it would be out of your head 10 seconds after you clicked off of it.
Oh, Jordan.
Well, here's the thing, though.
You have that magazine conceivably forever, so you could always flip it right. again the next time you're taking a dump.
It is in your toilet. It's right in your bathroom.
I've got the magazine next to my toilet of hell, but that doesn't do any good for anybody else, because I've already read that name a million times. I'm not going to check out their music. If I refuse to check out their music, which I guess I've done over the last 20 years, I can never become a fan, I can never give them money, I can never buy a CD, I can never go to a show or share their name like anywhere else. When you're written up on a blog, you're not relegated to a toilet of hell, you're relegated to all of Google, where anybody can find you at any point, you know?
Sure, I get that. But
so it's there's the chance... A smaller audience if you were to get written up by a blog versus a, say, Decibel, there you stand a better chance of, think about like a conversion funnel. So you see fewer people see you at the top of the funnel, but more people will convert, if you will, by having the ability to click play immediately versus reading your name in a magazine and then going over to their computer and then typing it in and then listening to it. And then, I don't know, maybe they like it, maybe they don't. Again, only a certain percentage of people that check you out are going to become fans.
Yeah, and I definitely saw your point. I mean, I never at any point disagreed with what you were saying. I think I was just more supporting where I was coming from. And I think at the end of the day, the fight for exposure, especially for metal bands these days, is so savage. It's so hard to be noticed. And it's so much harder to be taken seriously. I mean, if you end up in a magazine that essentially is a much smaller pond than the internet, if you got a guy sitting on his toilet reading Revolver, that's it. He's not on his phone looking at infinity. You know what I mean? So you're a lot more likely to have your band seen by a lot more eyes. Whether those eyes actually end up going to check out your band, buy your album, whatever, I mean, I get that. But it's just like in a numbers game, I think getting yourself featured in a magazine will, number one, get more eyes on you, get more people seeing who you are, what you're about. And, you know, at the same time, you're also taken just a little bit more seriously. And that's something you can use in the future when you do want to talk to metal blogs. You can show them, hey, I got a blurb in a real magazine. Look at me, you know.
That's fair.
So I saw a lot of value in that.
It's never a zero-sum game, and the most likely scenario is that you've already been written about by hundreds of blogs by the time that somebody from one of these big paper publications comes across you. I mean, how many times did we write about Sludge before they were noticed by, like, the mainstream press?
For sure. I totally get that. I guess it was just the way that Curtis had worded his question. And oddly enough, I mean, you had a lot of people commenting that the blog was the preference. But oddly enough, in his poll, the magazine ended up winning. More bands in the background wanted to be put in the magazine. That was just sort of the general attitude. Everybody wanted to get in on that numbers game.
I would say there's a, you know, even though print is dead, there's still a legitimacy to showing up in a print magazine versus a blog.
Yeah. Definitely.
Depending on the blog, obviously, but as someone who's in a band that has been in a print magazine and has also had someone literally write two sentences as a review on a blog, I personally would take that magazine.
That's fair. I don't have a band right now, but I will one day, just so I can prove you guys wrong by using only the power of electronic blogs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess what I was very interested to hear it was some input from somebody who was in a band who had experience with both of these things. And I was hoping that someone would chime in and say, yeah, I got in a magazine once. It wasn't as great as I thought it would be. Or, you know, I've done the blog thing forever. It never really did anything for me. You know, I was hoping that at some point someone would chime in. And I guess that was kind of the point of Curtis's poll, was to start that conversation, but it never really went anywhere. Everybody just kind of threw in their two cents as far as opinion was concerned over whether which choice they wanted the most and why. I didn't hear a lot of experience. So hopefully at some point we kind of bring that up to somebody and find out whether they got a lot more out of being featured in a magazine versus a blog or vice versa. Just something I'm curious about.
Yeah, I mean, I bet it would be difficult for a musician to tell you precisely where it was they broke, because
right.
it's never just you were covered by one blog or you were covered by one magazine. We're all in, you know, the metal press looking at the same things. So
yeah, that's fair.
If one person is covering you, more likely than not, a lot of people are covering you.
Plus, reading Toilet of Hell is just better than reading Revolver all of the time. So,
yeah, I hear that they reformatted or something, and they no longer cover like look at these guitar necks between titties, and it's something else. And instead of covering Godsmack and boobs, I don't believe it, but I'm also not curious enough to check it out.
Well, there goes the entire worth of Revolver. So good on you, Revolver. Maybe right, you okay. can compete with guys like us now.
Yeah, we're where the real money is.
Right.
You know, one-man depressive suicidal black metal bands.
What have you done?
Yeah, they fucked up. They fucked up bad.
Right. It's not, you know, just because it makes, you know, just because it's a good political move doesn't mean it's a good business move. Unfortunately.
I don't think anybody chimed in and said, hey, I would prefer to have my song played on a podcast. And
not at all.
I mean, like, we play music on this show. Sometimes we, I don't know, sometimes people find new music from it. But I think that with most podcasts, I guess it's kind of a afterthought. And I don't think that there's any one metal podcast that has enough listeners to really warrant that as a consideration. I mean, we've been broadcasting for the same something like 350 people for the last 2 years. So what I'm saying, why I've started adding to the spiel at the beginning of the show, tell a friend. I'm saying tell a fucking friend, dude.
Yeah, really.
I'm just talking to you, bro, and I have been talking to you for a long time, and I want to talk to your buddy as well. You can compare notes. You're like, oh, I think Breno's the dreamiest, or I think Jordan has the sexiest voice. Yeah. You know?
True.
I do think Jordan has the sexiest voice, unfortunately. Doesn't bow well for me as we're going by sexy voices.
Hello, ladies.
Hi, everybody. This is Brandon Side, and I think this is bullshit this week.
I really hate how I love that that scientific reason that when you hear your own voice, it's about three times higher the pitch than you expected. I've been dealing with that a lot on this podcast.
Is that the case, though? Because my voice is very high in my own head, and I feel like it. Maybe.
Well,
it's
how
just,
high? Is the question. Like, is helium voice in your head?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I talk through my nose or something. I don't fucking know. I've heard
it's
my voice.
It's taproot high.
I don't know what that means.
This song is a poem to myself. Oh, taproot was terrible.
I believe it. But yeah, also, I've heard my voice over the course of more than 100 episodes, so maybe I'm just dead to it now.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess just to put a cap on it, I'm interested to hear what you guys think as far as would you rather be in a longer blog feature and have all the perks that come with that, with your music embedded and direct links to your stuff where people can buy it, or would you rather have like a small blurb in a metal publication for the guys with bands out there? So interested to hear what you think.
Yeah. And we're also assuming that these are like positive coverage and somebody hasn't written in the back page of Decibel, by the way, Crotch Monster can suck my dick, you know?
Yeah. Would you rather be published on Toilet of Hell, or would you rather be published in Terrorizer's next freshest issue?
Let us know just in the, two let years us know from in the comments now. Below.
Just send £212 to Miranda What's-Her-Face, and I'm sure it'll happen.
Yeah, that'll probably be the case. Is there anything that you guys really want to talk about on the show?
Around, I'd say probably earlier this week, Misha Mansoor wrote quite a long diatribe from, this is the guitarist from Periphery, Misha Mansoor. He talked about the fact that Periphery makes no money. And I was always in the impression that Periphery was probably one of the few metal bands that actually might. But he kind of goes into the fact, and this, I'm not going to read it out loud because it's quite long. I recommend people check it out. But he's a bit more entrepreneurial in the fact that he has like his own pedal company. He has a lot of signature gear, and he's sort of what money he does make is doing the side hustles that the exposure from the band got him. So things like signature guitars, signature amplifiers, doing like the workshops at guitar centers or wherever, where he's kind of showcasing this gear and, you know, representing this gear. Like, that's where a guy like him makes his money.
I could be mistaken, but I feel like he does some like instrumental work as well for like, games and movies and shit like that.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. He's one of those really multifaceted kind of musicians that is really big into recording, really big into soundscapes, and he's got tons of gear if you ever kind of looked into his studio. I don't know if you guys have had, because Periphery is definitely not your bag, but
I've watched some of his instructional videos just to, I'm never going to own a piece of equipment like anything similar to what he's using. I'm not interested in like the Axe FX or like 8-string fan fret guitars or anything. I listen to caveman death metal. That's all I really care about.
Right on.
But I like to know what's going on. And that guy, of course, you know, Periphery is incredibly popular in metal, just with an audience that we don't really ever touch.
For sure, man. And I mean, Periphery is kind of on the razor's edge as far as like what's cool in modern metal. They have been for years. So many bands copy them, like, blatantly, as far as guitar tone and music and the way they compose their songs. Like, there's so many Periphery clones out there, but they're kind of the big deal. And it was surprising to hear that even bands as huge as Periphery, with so many, honestly, like millions of fans, they still don't make a dime from their music, or certainly not enough to live off of. So we were kind of thinking, like, what bands actually do? And it seems like the consensus is the really, really old guys still do.
Yeah, and this is something I've thought about for a long time. If you want to make a living as a musician, the best thing you could have done is had a hit song 20 years ago. Like, that's really it. That was when you could still make a lot of money. And if you had one big hit, people will still see you live, like regardless of who it is.
For sure.
It boggles my mind sometimes when I look at the show listings around town of shit that's sold out. And it's like, really? Those guys with that one song back for in the 90s? Okay.
What a
Spin Doctors, really?
One thing I've always wondered, because I've never experienced it myself, and I don't know if you guys have either. You probably go to more concerts than I have, and God knows where you end up. But I've always wondered, for those guys that were like total 90s one-hit wonders or one-hit wonders otherwise, do they play that one hit first when they get on the stage to get everybody pumped? Or do they
play that last? You make people stay there for the entire hour to make sure that they don't leave.
What I've heard that some of these bands are doing is they're like covering other popular one-hit songs from other bands at the time, which I think is a brilliant idea.
Oh my god, are you serious? That's hilarious.
I saw not quite a one-hit wonder. A buddy of mine asked me to go see the Gin Blossoms with him several years ago, and that was actually legitimately great. Like, they were extremely good, and they had more songs. Worthwhile songs than I assumed that they did. I don't think that's the case with most of these 90s bands.
They all tour together now too. Like, you'll get these like summer festivals where it's like Sugar Ray and Eve Six and Uncle Cracker and like four or five other bands that only had one or two hits, and that way they get people like in their mid-30s for their one concert a year.
Yeah, and you know, they all get a babysitter, they go out, they get smashed as hell, they probably buy merch too. It seems to me like the X factor with a lot of these bands, you know, if you don't have the privilege of being a band that had a hit 20 years ago, if you were somehow more under the radar, like having your merch game down is a big deal. Like when I think about the most popular, the most money making bands around, Metallica is number one, of course. Like they sell out stadiums, and their merch is available everywhere where you can buy a Coke. Same thing with Slayer. Yeah. Same thing with like the Misfits. All of the, it's
AC/DC, Guns N' Roses,
Iron Maiden for sure. They make a ton of money.
Yep.
These are all these factors. Like they're all still huge. They don't make money on record sales though. That's what they have in common.
Nope.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like you got all these bands that have been around for God, it's like been 30, 40 years, and they're still the ones who are taking up space in the stadiums. And it just doesn't really leave any room for the little guy, but there's so many little guys that how the hell do you stand out these days, especially considering you got a band like Periphery who kind of pioneered a very, very popular sound in modern metal. And even they are like, as far as making music and I mean, making money in music, they're like absolute chumps. They're all broke. You know, they're still sleeping on floors. It's like, fuck, man.
It's because their music isn't covered in magazines. It's only covered in blogs.
That's what it is. It must be it.
It's like
in a magazine.
It's like War Games. The only winning move is to not play. You know, it goes back to the point that we make on every episode. Don't start a band. Like, if you want to have a happy, successful life, like just being in a band is probably the last thing you need to do.
Yeah. Get a job, get a wife, get a dog, get a house. Work on that.
I mean, well, getting a wife and a dog are more reasonable than like getting a good job nowadays.
Yeah. Well, figure it out. You know, put your effort in that as opposed to making it huge. But it's interesting to think about how, I mean, you can possibly make a living as a musician, but you can't do it from your music. Yeah. I always thought it was so interesting. I know you're not a big YouTube guy, Joe, and I won't go into this point too much. But if you look at some of these YouTube guys that are very, very popular as far as playing guitar and playing metal, guys like Jared Dines, Rob Scallion, Ryan Bruce. I mean, these guys, they have very popular channels. They talk about gear. They have a lot of memes, a lot of jokes. Some of these videos get millions of hits. But for some reason, these guys can't seem to get away from trying to start a band and trying to make it big as a band and using their exposure as YouTube stars to launch a band. And you'll notice when they actually try to release original music and try to put out albums and stuff, it doesn't get them anywhere near as much as their actual YouTubing does. Like no one goes out and sees their bands. They're playing tiny venues. They're not selling any albums. It's just like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, you're never going to make it if like on your music alone as a metal artist, it's like impossible.
Yeah. It's like, you got a fistful of dollars in one hand. And in the other hand, you've got like, well, maybe being in a real band, nobody's interested in like the people that want to see you drill strings onto a shovel and, you know, play djent with it. Those people don't want to hear your original compositions.
No. Right. It's like the things that make you popular, are totally like wholly different. You got guys like Rob Scallon who are recording metal on wax cylinders just for the fun of it, and that video will get like 2 million hits, and that's where his money is. That's where he's
even
like
I watched that
his
video.
Money.
If yeah, that gives dude, you any everybody idea. Did. So yeah. I gotta say, I'm not a huge fan by any means. I think they do a couple of really interesting things. Their video game is on point. It's very professional, very well done. So I don't know why you would want to get away from what you're doing there that's successful.
Yeah. I mean, these guys have like signature gear now. It's crazy. You go on guitarcenter.com, you can find a Rob Scallon signature guitar, which was made by Rob Chapman, who got popular with YouTube videos. He started a guitar company from this shit. It's like, it's mind-blowing. But at the same time, Rob Chapman also has a band that doesn't do very well, and he puts a lot of time and effort into it.
Seems to me like we gotta rough game out there. Yeah, we gotta start pumping out video content, man. I'm not a terribly attractive or engaging personality, so gonna have that challenge to work through, but I'm sure that's just a small stepping stone to success.
You got to work on your best. Hi guys, and then you were.
Hey guys, be sure to hit the subscribe button.
Subscribe button. Smash that subscribe button.
Smash that subscribe button.
Like, subscribe, and give me a comment below.
If you like this video, be sure to tell your friends.
My GoFundMe's in the links below.
Fantastic. I've thought about doing the YouTube thing. I actually tried. Like, I got a fairly decent SLR camera that records pretty good video. The Blue Yeti isn't the best microphone in the world, but it does all right. I, like, put myself in front of a camera, and I recorded a video, and I wanted to die and scream. It was horrible. Yeah, so definitely. It's just, yeah. So never going to happen. Toilet TV, maybe someday. We'll figure it out.
I could not. What we need to find is somebody who is both engaging and has no shame. Those are the two things successful to be like a video personality.
Yeah.
You got to be willing to look like an asshole. And right. I don't have it in me. I'm just too prone to shame.
Yeah. That's how it works, man. Maybe if you were just like drunk and high all the time, it could work.
Well, yeah, what if? Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Jordan?
About what?
Fuck, I don't know. We talk about a lot of shit.
Jordan, I don't know. I would say that metal isn't worth it. If you have a side gig, like YouTube videos or whatever, making instruments, that should probably be your main gig, and doing metal should be the side thing that you just like to do for fun on the weekends and play your local Cue and Brew.
What is a Cue and Brew?
Yeah, pool hall with beer.
Oh, okay.
That sometimes they move the pool table to the side so you can set up, you know, your PA and play Metallica cover.
Try not to hurt your back moving the pool table out of the way, fellas. RIP, Riot Act 666. I really don't have anything else. I went to Six Flags over the weekend, and I guess I don't go out much to places where normal people go, and after going out to spending a day at Six Flags, I totally understand why Trump won. I think the middle class of this country is completely irredeemable.
Six Flags.
Well, is it still the middle class, or is this, you know, there's only two classes now. There's no more middle class.
Tickets per person are like $80, man. Like, and then
do they still do the deal? When I used to go to Great Adventure in New Jersey 20 years ago, they used to have Coke cans that had, if you like, you bring this in, you get in for free. So do they do that anymore?
That was how it was when I was a kid too. But we looked around, we couldn't really find any deals like that. It seems like after like the ninth bankruptcy, whoever took over the Six Flags group has really gotten razor sharp on this stuff, because it's $25 to pay for parking, $80 per ticket. Plus, if you want to, you can skip the lines for $150. Every drink or food item is a minimum of $10. Like, there are definitely the middle class in this country is shrinking, definitely, but it's difficult for me to imagine that a working family can really afford to go out to Six Flags, just given how ungodly expensive it is.
Or this is their one thing. You know, people do that all the time. Like,
that's true.
They go to the movies once a month because it's $60 for four people.
Some people get season passes for Six Flags, especially around here. We got a Six Flags over in Agawam, and like during the springtime and summertime, everybody's trying to hawk these Six Flags season passes. And if you like really look how much a ticket is for one off versus the season pass, it seems like a no-brainer. But I can't fucking imagine wanting to go to Six Flags like every single week. It's just so draining.
Awful.
In so many ways.
We got there like right as the park opened, so we were able to do every big ride within like an hour and a half, which that's my hot tip. Go there before the park opens and you can do everything immediately, and then leave immediately, because we stuck around.
Get the fuck out.
We stuck around, and that was a mistake, man. The cool trend in apparel that I've gathered is people wearing very aggressive military-esque shirts, but I don't think any of these people actually served in them. They're like grunt-style t-shirts. They all say shit like, if I charge, follow me. If I return, kill me. If I die, avenge me. And I'm just looking at, you know, a middle-aged woman with the largest fupa I have ever seen with that on the back of her shirt. And I'm just like, I don't think I'm going to do any of those things.
Lead, follower, get out of the way.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, I think that might also be a Texas thing.
Possibly. I don't know. There are chuds everywhere across the nation.
Oh, yeah. Without question, but...
Yeah, I'm one of them, so...
Yeah. Well... That's all I got. I could go on a longer tirade about this, but maybe I should just not be mean to the thousands of horrible people that I saw.
Save it for a Patreon episode. Make people
hundreds of horrible people who, you know, listen to this show. You don't want to alienate them now, do you?
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm a chud that wears faux military t-shirts to Six Flags.
How dare
Wait
you?
Wait a second. Well, I do, before we end and wrap up... Before we wrap up the show, just a quick correction. All this stuff from Misha Mansour was actually from an interview. He didn't write all this. This is just, there were so many quotations in a huge list. It kind of looked like a post to me, but he actually had an interview so that he was went in very in depth with all this stuff, but still suggest you guys check it out.
Yeah, some guy just closed his draft on a 6,000 word correction to us.
Oops.
Followed up with, please do not print my name or this email anywhere.
Ooh.
Well, we did pretty good. It seems like we had a quiet week or two where we didn't piss anybody off, so I'm glad that we're back at it again. I'm going to do my best to really stir up some shit this week in a completely unrelated way, so hopefully we'll have something cool to talk about next week.
Sick, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, give us the money on the Patreon. Follow us on Twitter, at 365 Days of Horror, at Joe Thrash and Kill, at That's Not Metal, at Toilet of Hell. Tell a friend, you fucking welching chuds. Okay, we'll see you next week.
Keep it metal, bros.
Bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.